He's actually now, he calls himself Flanagan. Go ahead, Brian. What do you got to say about this?
Well, I made a comment before about rioting, and now that the death warrant has been signed by the governor of Pennsylvania for Umea, I'm not sure what else can be done. I don't know if anybody has any plans or what could be done. I don't know if Clinton has veto power over that, but I'm thinking the way I think one of the deciding factors of getting Bush out of office was the Rodney King riots. And if there's, I'm thinking mainly if there is, you know, a threat of widespread rioting, and it's always easy for low-income people and homeless people maybe even to think about rioting, because I mean with people with property or people that have been in, you know, if for anybody, people with children, it's like a really scary thing. It's like having your house on fire. But if there's anything that could to keep him from getting zapped, it might be that, you know, the threat of the immediate threat of large-scale rioting in Pennsylvania, maybe the best place to be to come from.
Well, we'll send you to Pennsylvania, and maybe you can cross a few state lines and get arrested as part of the new Pennsylvania 7. That's a joke, folks. But regarding what Lisa was saying earlier on the air, I do have this letter, which I have found, from the San Francisco Examiner. And it's dated, it's yesterday's paper, June 1st. It's a letter from a guy called Willis Greenstreet. And it's about drugs and racism, and here's what it says. The U.S. Sentencing Commission's report on harsh penalties for crack cocaine use by minorities reveals the ugly racist nature of the drug war. Here are some consequences of this repressive policy. The biggest single cause of crime in the inner city is the fact that most black men cannot find jobs. According to federal government figures, almost half of all black men in America are chronically unemployed. The biggest single cause of chronic unemployment in black men is the fact that most of them have prison records, and nobody hires black men with prison records. The biggest single reason that black men have prison records is that over the last 14 years, millions of black men have been thrown into prisons on nonviolent drug charges. Currently, one-fourth of all young black men in America are in prison or on parole, most of them for nonviolent drug charges. Half of all black men in Washington, D.C. are in jail or on parole. More than 90% have arrest records. The same is true of inner-city black men in Baltimore, New York, New Jersey, and Florida. And Lisa tells us, Santa Cruz, apparently. Two-thirds of today's black male high school students will be dead, disabled, or in prison before their 30th birthday. The majority will go to prison because of nonviolent drug charges. For every black man who goes to college, three will be in prison. By the year 2000, about half of all black men in America will have gone to prison, most for nonviolent drug charges. Most of those who go to prison will be released in society again because they are black men with prison records. They will be permanently unemployable. It is time to end officially sanctioned racism disguised as drug policy. It's time to end this drug war altogether. Willis Greenstreet, San Francisco, San Francisco Examiner, June 1st. And of course, what he's commenting on here is the U.S. Sentencing Commission's refusal to change the disparity in penalties between crack and cocaine. Apparently, it's much more, there are much higher penalties for those who are using crack than for other drugs, which results in a much higher sentence against black people, because that's where those drugs go. That's the story about race in Santa Cruz and drugs, and I've got a lot of articles here on drug forfeiture laws, which are, thank God, running into trouble. Most recent thing I found, if I've got my clippings right, and I may not have my clippings right, it's like they're here, there, and everywhere. Here we go. It's an article on Double Jeopardy. You may have caught this in the paper. This is from actually about a month ago. How U.S. District Court Judge Vaughn Walker, about a month ago, dismissed 43 counts against alleged heroin smuggler, ruling the government had already punished the guy for the same crimes by confiscating drug money from him. He had faced a possible mandatory life sentence for operating a continuing criminal enterprise, used young women to smuggle heroin to the Bay Area inside girdles. He now faces a sole count for money laundering and a possible maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. Defense lawyers praised the ruling as a proper curb on what they say is the government's growing abuse of civil forfeiture laws in the war on drugs. In other words, they're saying you can't both seize somebody's property and money and property under the drug forfeiture law and then try them for the same crime as a criminal offense. That is double jeopardy. Now, for people who are big-dime drug dealers, this may seem to be not such a hot thing, since some people favor prosecuting drug dealers. I've even thought of the thrill of seeing these major tobacco companies go down, at least have their assets confiscated for the kind of criminal misrepresentations they've been doing for the last 50 years around tobacco and the kind of continuing addiction they like to spread. And tobacco, as our audience may know, is more addictive than heroin and more deadly. Over 400,000 people a year die from nicotine products, whereas heroin doesn't kill more than 1,000 or 2,000 people in terms of actual deaths. And there'll be more some violence around and deaths in terms of police, drug dealer shootouts and that sort of thing, but in terms of the actual product, nicotine is more deadly and continues to expand among young people, which is the real travesty. But the question is, you know, should people face double jeopardy on this issue? Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals decision, the nation's first such ruling, prohibited the government from forfeiting alleged criminal proceeds from people in civil court and separately prosecuting them for the same actions in criminal court. Such tactics, the appeals court said, amount to being punished twice for the same crime and are barred by the U.S. Constitution's ban on double jeopardy. The appeals court said that to be fair, prosecutors should bring civil forfeiture and criminal prosecutions as part of the same proceeding. And that's obvious. You do a proceeding against a drug lord, and when you convict him, you take his property. You don't do it until that happens. Otherwise, you put him in a position of having to defend himself in the civil proceeding, where he needs to prove that he's innocent, in essence. And then the evidence he presents can be used against him in the criminal proceeding, which then will follow. So it's obviously a case of double jeopardy. And I mean, it's a sleazy scene for big-time drug dealers, obviously, but the whole business of going after these criminalized drugs, when the more deadly and lethal ones are being actually subsidized by the government, is the ultimate in Alice in Wonderland absurdity. And of course, has a major impact on poor people and on homeless people. I mean, if you try to smoke a joint, you don't have a living room to hide in, you're likely to get in trouble, or you have to worry about getting in trouble. And so this is a poverty issue as well as being an issue of civil rights for other people. Another issue that Lisa brought up was prostitution. And I know people who are in a local prostitutes union, and I've often championed the rights of women to make those choices if they want to be a sex worker and sell their bodies. If that is their choice and that's what they choose to do, they shouldn't be harassed by the police, intimidated and abused by pimps and other males, and otherwise subjected to penalties for doing that. On the other hand, I like to present dissenting views and to get the opinions of other people on this issue. Maybe you have an opinion, you folks out there, and again, we're calling, or you're calling, hopefully, and we're talking to you from Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you can call us at 427-3772. Here's an article by Melissa Farley called How Prostitution Cripples Emotions in the San Francisco Examiner, from yesterday's Examiner. A couple of interesting articles there. Some people believe women freely choose to enter prostitution from a potpourri of nice job options. Others think women experience sexual pleasure from prostitution. Another myth is that women become wealthy or empowered in prostitution. In spite of evidence regarding coercion, battering, degradation, and terror in the lives of prostitutes, the myth persists that prostitution is glamorous or sexy. These myths couldn't be further from the truth. My co-researcher Norma Hotling and I conducted interviews with 130 prostitutes last year and early this year. 80% of the prostitutes we interviewed have been physically assaulted since entering prostitution, 54% by their customers. 77% of them have been raped, 45% by customers. Other research has shown that from 55% to 90% of prostitutes have been sexually abused as children, often by more than one perpetrator. We also know that members of the commercial sex industry recruit children into prostitution when they are, on average, 13 years old. Poverty and homelessness are major contributing factors to entering prostitution, and 84% of those we interviewed had been homeless at some point. Myth also has it that prostitutes who work on the streets are different from other prostitutes. This is an assumption that has not been adequately studied. For example, research has shown that 75% of women who are escort prostitutes have attempted suicide. In my clinical experience, all prostitutes suffer from serious psychological damage. The author, Melissa Farley, is a San Francisco clinical and research psychologist. Statistics can't provide a picture of the devastating psychological effects. To work as a prostitute, it is necessary to shut down emotionally. The person who is for sale then is actually a pretend self. This provides psychological protection in much the same way a political prisoner protects herself during torture. Over time, it becomes difficult for someone to switch back. The emotionally distanced self takes over more and more of the private self. Prostitution is not a pleasant sexual experience for prostitutes. In addition to shutting down emotionally, prostitutes must shut off sexually. When they want to be sexually involved with someone they care about, it is usually impossible to get turned on. Most prostitutes are unable to have orgasms with their chosen partners. Some have told me that it feels as if their partners are tricks. Prostitutes experience a systematic destruction of the sexual self. The hatred and contempt aimed at prostitutes can't be adequately described in words. Prostitutes are treated as if they were filth. As one woman told us, "I'm nothing. No one they can feel connected to. I'm only the genitals that they use. I'm like a blow-up doll. I'm just a piece of shit." It's not surprising that the level of hatred aimed at prostitutes causes them to hate themselves, to become depressed, and to frequently use drugs in order to avoid these feelings. It does not seem possible to work as a prostitute and not be emotionally turned out or high on drugs. I guess emotionally turned off is what she means. Like wartime combat veterans, prostitutes suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. Symptoms are acute anxiety, depression, insomnia, irritability, flashbacks, emotional numbing, and being in a state of emotional hyper-alert. In our research interviews, 88% of the San Francisco prostitutes told us they wanted to get out of prostitution. They told us that what they needed most in order are a home or safe place, job training, drug and alcohol treatment. These services must be offered in an environment absolutely free of sexual harassment. Prostitutes also need peer support and crisis-oriented psychotherapy in order to help them deal with post-traumatic stress disorder. Sometimes I think it is easier to see how people get hurt when they live in another part of the world. For example, we can look at the devastation of the Oklahoma City bombing. We've begun to look at the consequences of ethnic cleansing in Bosnia. Sometimes we can even look at the sex industry in Asia and see its devastating effects on children. Now it is time to address the harm and support the survivors of the commercial sex industry right here at home. That's by Melissa Farley, a column in the San Francisco Examiner from yesterday, June 1st, How Prostitution Cripples Emotions. And we have a caller calling in here.
Hello, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is Matt, and I'm glad to be on the radio.
Oh, okay, Matt, what's up?
Well, I had a few thoughts going on. One thing on the thing you were just reading on prostitution, I think it's a little dangerous to say that those are necessarily connections with prostitution itself.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the problem is that, some of those problems are that many prostitutes, because it is illegal, similar to drug addicts who have to commit crimes to get their drugs,
mm-hmm.
it is not necessarily inherent within prostitution that those things happen, but perhaps that the prostitutes have to be out on the streets in dangerous situations, whereas
mm-hmm.
if we were to accept this as something that's been going on for thousands of years, whatever we want to say,
mm-hmm.
As an acceptable practice where people could be do it in a safe place
mm-hmm.
as some sort of business transaction,
mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily, say that it's a good or bad thing, but I do believe that it should be a person's choice to do that if they wish,
mm-hmm.
That perhaps some of those problems you just mentioned would disappear or at least be alleviated to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
In much the same way that if we decriminalized many sorts of drugs, we would see some of the crimes associated with people committing drugs to get the, committing crimes to get the money to get the drugs that they're addicted to,
mm-hmm.
those would disappear, such as you find in, you know, in Denmark. Or no, not in Denmark, but in Holland.
Mm-hmm.
Another thought was, you mentioned Scott Kennedy, and that he had a phone number?
He has three, actually.
Yeah. Would you be willing to give those out over the air so that all of us interested citizens might be able to contact Mr. Kennedy?
Sure. I know one of them by heart, which is the City Council hotline number. You can call that number, and actually I gave that over the air earlier, but happy to give it again.
Okay.
It's 429-3550, and that will give you the City Council staff, and they are actually in until 5 o'clock today, after which you'll get a recording and you'll be able to leave a message for Scott Kennedy. In order to find Scott Kennedy's number in the phone book, look under R. Scott Kennedy, and you will get his number at home. I think it's 426-6640, but I'm not sure, so you might want to double check on that. That's R. Scott Kennedy in the phone book.
Okay.
And until Scott and I developed opposing positions on the downtown ordinances, and I vigorously opposed his candidacy, he was quite accessible in terms of phone calls, so you may find him easier to talk to than I have.
Okay.
But let's talk a little bit about this prostitution situation. I mean, I actually introduced this article as a sort of a critical view, and the more I read it, the less I disagree with it, that there should be support services for those who want to get off prostitution, for those there should be housing, safe places, job training, drug and alcohol treatment. I think all of those things, I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, but that's society-wide, not just within prostitution.
And that's true, too. And I think your point is a good point, that what's missing from the article is any kind of caveat or examination of what the impact of criminalization has on prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say whether there's a different situation in Nevada,
mm-hmm.
where prostitution, that's the one, I think that's one of the only states where it's legal.
Mm-hmm.
Or not Nevada, but actually it's just in
several counties of Nevada.
Many of the counties of Nevada, right. Since this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, let's get down here. Have you had any prostitution experiences yourself or have you have any friends who are prostitutes where you can give us direct information that either gives credence to Farley's article or gives us some other insight?
Sadly, I have to plead ignorance.
Uh-huh.
I don't. I'm speaking of it more from a theoretical position.
Right, as am I. I mean, I know some prostitutes, but it's been a while, and I haven't really... I probably should... If anyone is out there who is a sex worker who wants to get on the air, Brian's tapping me on the shoulder here, maybe we can get him to talk about his experiences, or those of his friends. Please give a call to 427-3772. Call in. Any other thoughts?
I had one other one, because I did... I just tuned in a little bit ago. You mentioned movie Abu Jamal. Hold on.
Yeah. Oh, no, I should be. Sorry.
I'm back. Forgive
okay,
me.
Go ahead.
What was it on Mumia?
Mumia Abu Jamal, who is a former Black Panther, was convicted of murder on many regards, trumped-up charges in Pennsylvania, award-winning journalist, political prisoner on death row. His death warrant was signed this morning by the governor of Pennsylvania, and refuse and resist is, according to this poster, which was put out some time ago, planning a demonstration tomorrow at 2 at the town clock. It's supposed to be the next Saturday after the announcement of his death warrant being signed. And the phone number, if you're interested in getting more information, and I don't know if it's operational, but it's on the flyer, is 335-3268.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow, that's hard news to take.
Yeah, there's a whole story around that. In fact, I have a flyer here about Abu Jamal. I can read a little bit of it on the air if you think that would be useful.
It probably would. I need to get off the line.
I'll let you go.
Thank you for giving me this access to the airwaves.
Oh, you're welcome.
Did other people use it as well?
Thank you.
Thank you. You're doing wonderful work.
Hey, thank you. And call again.
I will. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
And that was Matt. And we invite you to call in at 427-3772. There's another caller. And we'll get back to him in a moment.
Yes, you're on the air with Radio Free Santa Cruz.
This is Coral.
Hi, Coral.
I been listening. I think the less government involvement with trying to get help for prostitutes, the better, because I have worked in the mental health system, and the idea of sex is such taboo. They don't even counsel people that have been sexually abused in the county anymore.
Hmm.
They seem to think it's a disease. I think would do more harm than good. And there needs to be alternative ways to give people who've been in the sex field help, because I think they can. I don't think there's going to be any legislation on this. And since it's illegal to be a prostitute in the first place,
mm-hmm.
it's unlikely that there's going to be any money spent on counseling people.
It's such a very it's a multi-million dollar business, of course, in some areas, and it's one of the few ways that people who are poor, as well as selling drugs, can make money. I mean, that's there was recently a sting in the beach at the Beach Flats, the River Flats area, I guess it was. Maybe it was the Beach Flats. I'm not sure where. I guess Jay Robbins, a SCAN member, got picked up by cops for offering a prostitute $22. And what I heard was that $22 is the cost of a room in one of these areas. And so a homeless person can get a place for a night and get off the streets and get away from the sleeping van by getting into a prostitution type situation. And it's just the issue is all linked together, the way I see it. You know, it's
not only you get a ticket for doing that, or get, what did he get, a citation?
I think he got a citation for being a John, and I'm not entirely sure. I just got a, there was a quick thing in the Sentinel, I think it was, or some little blurb here and there. It was a shot at SCAN, the Santa Cruz Action Network, for those. And I like Jay, I think he's a good guy, and I think somebody trying to get the services of a sex worker, you know, should not be jacked up by the police. I think that's bullshit. I think that's foolish.
It's a complex thing, and
yeah. Do you have any friends who work in the sex field? And do you have any, or if you yourself have worked in the sex field, your friends have? Do you have any more insights locally to bear on prostitution?
Just conversations I've had with, and
it's okay to say no.
Huh?
It's okay to say you don't, you know, I mean, it's...
Yeah, not in Santa Cruz recently.
Mm-hmm.
Or like San Francisco. So it's not, something that comes to mind right away.
Right.
What's going on right now.
Okay. Any other comments on the subject?
I just wonder what you had in mind for having halfway houses, having counseling and all.
Well, my suggestions are really at the moment I'm operating out of ignorance. I was simply responding as the previous caller Matt does, essentially, to my usual reaction when people bring up prostitution is, oh, it's another example of the states moving in and criminalizing conditions between consenting adults, you know, relations between consenting adults. But the other side of it is, as this woman Melissa Farley in the Examiner points out, that the realities of prostitution under the current illegal status and maybe patriarchal male society and Western society, or maybe, and I'm not quite sure what the exact conditions are, but prostitutes are suffering all kinds of things. And that, I guess, whatever kinds of resources are necessary, whether they be obviously homes, jobs, safe places, drug and alcohol treatment centers, sound like they make sense. But as you point out, I think you were pointing this out, that turning things over to government agencies
messes it up.
It may mess it up, particularly in the case of people who are, you know, dealing with the so-called mental illness stigma. So. Let me wind this one down, Carl, because bottom line, Bob LaMonica has just shown up in the studio, and I'm going to have to kind of get ready to peel out of here. But and thank you for your call.
Bring it up again, and we'll think of some solutions.
Okay, if I don't, you bring it up.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
And you are back with you-know-who, Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides, and I'm Bathrobes Pier Robert, and you've been listening to almost 3 hours of Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides on every Monday and Friday from 10 to 12, and sometimes from 10 to 1. It depends on whether my voice is holding out and whether Bob LaMonica is able to break into the studio with an axe to get me out of here. It's always a big question. Let's see, what else we got before we completely finish up here? We're almost finished, although it seems like there's always more to do. Well, you didn't get the Sydney Lens reading much, but we did get a nice sampling of callers, more than in the past. I'm going to read you a little about Mumia Abu-Jamal, who... as you may know from this announcement, has had his death warrant signed by the governor. This is from a flyer put out, looks like Refuse and Resist, at 335-3268. And this is what they say about Mumia. Mumia Abu-Jamal, revolutionary journalist, ex-Black Panther, and supporter of MOVE, an organization from the 70s and 80s in Philadelphia, has led a life committed uncompromisingly to the people and in resistance to their oppressors. On December 9th, 1981, Mumia interfered in the blatantly racist beating of a Black man by a policeman in Mumia's hometown, Philadelphia. After the ensuing conflict, Mumia ended up in the hospital bleeding profusely from a bullet buried deep in his stomach while cop Daniel Falker lay dead of another gunshot wound. In an attempt to silence the man with a longtime reputation as the voice of the voiceless, the United States injustice system determined to railroad and frame Mumia in the cop killing. Despite the fact that witnesses at the scene who are not allowed to testify in Mumia's trial say that another individual was the killer, despite the fact that the prosecution's key witness was bribed by the state, despite the fact Mumia was neither armed at the scene nor allowed to be present at his own trial, despite the fact that the public defense was funded at only $150 for researching the case, despite the fact that Mumia himself was shot and gravely debilitated by the police, Mumia has sat on death row for the past 13 years. What is clear is that Mumia is being held not as the guilty party to a crime, but as a revolutionary activist who speaks the truth about a sick and destructive system. Mumia is a political prisoner of the U.S. Despite the complete brutalization Mumia has received, even today, he continues to resist the system which desperately wants to silence him. After his inauguration in January of 1995, the new governor indicated Mumia as the fifth death warrant he would sign. So apparently he did sign it. That was Governor Ridge. And if you want information, call 335-3268 and or come to the town clock, which I hope is accurate on this flyer, as having a demonstration tomorrow at 2 o'clock to protest the death warrant of Mumia Abu-Jamal. Again, I repeat, his death warrant was signed by the governor within the last 3 hours. So, that's that. This is about the end of Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides. We'll put on a little adios music from Peggy Seeger called The Song of Choice. If you want to call me between shows, you can reach me at 423-HUFF. That's 423-4833, which is the number of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I'm interested in any reports on police abuse, particularly around poverty, people in the streets, street people, homeless people, and that sort of thing. I hope you call again on Monday when I hope to be back. And I want to thank our guest Brian Flanagan, Backyard Brian, and George Solis, Sonoma County activist, for coming.
Bye, Linda.
And I want to thank Linda Edwards for being alive and for doing what she's done. And I'm going to give you a little segue music here.
Second rate life, second rate world.
understand. Yes, I'll have to say it again tomorrow. A boy. I tagged along behind the gang and wore me corduroys. Everybody said I only did it to annoy, but I was gonna be an engineer. Mama told me, can't you be a lady? You do this to make me the mother of a girl. Wait until you're older, dear, and maybe you'll be glad that you're a girl. Dainty as a Dresden statue, gentle as a Jersey cow. Smooth as silk is creamy milk. Learn to coo, learn to moo. That's what you do to be a lady now. When I went to school, I learned to write and how to read some history, geography, and home economy. A type and it was skill that every girl is sure to need to while away the extra time until the time to breed. Then they had the nerve to say, but won't you like to be? I says, I'm gonna be an engineer. No, you only need to learn to be a lady. The duty isn't yours for to try and run the world. An engineer could never have a baby. You'll never do that, you're a girl. She's smart, tall woman. I wonder how she got that way. You get no choice, you get no voice. Just play mom, pretend you're dumb. And that's how you come to be a lady today. Then Julie come along, we set up a congregation. We were busy every night, love and recreation. I spent the day at work so he could get his education. Well, now he's an engineer. He says, I know you'll always be a lady. It's the duty of my darling to love me all her life. Could an engineer look after all her babies? Remember, dear, that you're my wife. Well, as soon as Jimmy got a job, I began again. Then happy at the turret lay the year or so. And then, the morning that the twins were born, Jimmy says to them, kids, your mother was an engineer. You owe it to the kids to be a lady. Dainty as a dish rag, faithful as a child. Stay at home, you got to mind the baby. Remember, you're a mother now. Well, every time I turn around, it's something else to do. It's cook the meal, mend the socks, sweep the floor or two. I listen in to Jimmy Young, it makes me want to spew. I was gonna be an engineer. Don't I really wish that I could be a lady? I could do the lovely things that a lady's supposed to do. I wouldn't even mind if only they would pay me. And I could be a person too. What price for a woman? You could buy her for a ring of gold. To love and obey without any pay. You got a cook and a nurse, for better or worse. You don't need a purse when the lady is sold. Ah, but now the times are harder and the Jimmy's got the sack. I went down to Vickers, they were glad to have me back. But I'm a third class citizen, my wages tell me that. And I'm a first class engineer. The boss is just with you as the lady. You only got the job cause you can't afford a man. To you I keep the profits highest maybe. You're just a cheap pair of hands. You got one fault, you're a woman. You're not worth the equal pay. A bitch of tart, you're nothing but harsh. Shallow and vain, you got no brain. You go down the drain like a lady today. Well, I listened to my mother and I joined a typing pool. I listened to my lover and I put him through his school. But if I listen to the boss, I'm just a bloody fool and an underpaid engineer. I've been a sucker ever since I was a baby, as a daughter, as a wife, as a mother and a dear. But I fight them as a woman, not a lady. Fight them as an engineer.
Early every year, the seeds are growing.
Yes.
Santa Cruz. See someone being hassled on the street, take time out, take 10 minutes, have the foresight to carry a pen and a notebook with you, little notebook, or even if you don't, just stand and watch. If a friend of yours walks by, ask your friend to stand and watch. If the police are doing nothing wrong, they should have nothing to be afraid of. They should have no grievance. It's every citizen's right to watch a police contact with a citizen. Don't believe them when they say you have to walk away 40 feet. No, 10 feet is quite sufficient, you know, provided you're visible and not making any dangerous moves and so forth. This society will only remain free as long as we continue to be vigilant and we continue to exert ourselves to make sure that that happens. The fear that was engendered by the massive police presence last May 11th downtown, when police came to remove people for sitting on the sidewalk because the Kennedy City Council, the Kennedy-Rotkin City Council, wanted to make an example of what was going on down there and stop Food Not Bombs from serving and establish a little homeless cleansed, homeless free mall there in terms of, they don't like to say they're anti-homeless. They brag about their social services, but they want the homeless out of public spaces. That's what they want. They don't want them sitting near shops. They don't want them asking for money anywhere downtown. It's easy for me to lose my way here because I'm talking about Linda Edwards. I'm reading you a kind of addenda I wrote that I'm going to be sending out over the email, over the news groups on the net, the internet, along with a flyer that I made Saturday night celebrating the memory of Linda Edwards, the Lark of Santa Cruz, who died on Saturday night. Linda Edwards died at the age of 48. She fought vigorously, loudly, peacefully for the rights of homeless people, for the rights of poor people, for the rights of all of us. Most every day of her life that I knew her for 8 years, I knew her since 1988. And she actually was around Santa Cruz and the Santa Clara County too, San Jose, since 1982. More about that in another show. Maybe I'll interview her her partner, Doug, who was with her till the end at the hospital and who... truly loyal person over all the years. Linda was a woman who... was quite free in her own life, and she had many friends and many lovers, and Doug remained true to her throughout this entire situation. And Linda remained true to him, too. But I'm not going to go into that because I'm not an expert on that subject. No more about her public work. In an arena dominated by men, Linda Edwards insisted on equal acknowledgement and respect for women. She was frequently the only woman at a lot of protests involving where many of the people who were protesting were drunk. If you're on the street at night and it's cold, and it does get damn cold on those streets, even in Santa Cruz, beautiful Santa Cruz, which some misguided merchants think is somehow the a trail that all hippies come to and stay at, in a wonderful place where, you know, unless we're constantly sicking the police on homeless people, that everyone will come and live here. I don't think that's true at all, but...
And it's time that the citizens of Santa Cruz recognized the reality and acted responsibly, which is to, at this point, sign the petition, be one of 14,000 people that are willing to sign the petition to put the recall measure on the ballot. If you're interested, 457-2670 is the number. I'll be back shortly.
You're so chic, do you ever love me? Baby, come around, it's realized that you can see what's wrong with you.
You're there. I hope you're tuned in, and I hope that you are participating in some way in what's going down around you politically. You know, you can call in on this station now, 427-3772, and what I thought I would put out as an issue, because I think it all ties in. I think it's important that citizens get a broad perspective. I think one of the dilemmas that we have, if there's any validity to democracy whatsoever, is that we need educational politics badly. in my opinion. We need to be able to open up about things, because when we do open up, we begin to see the effects of stage contrivance, publicity, and corporate journalism, and we're not so easily swayed by this kind of photo op nonsense that politicians have gotten away with for years and years and years. It's really a question of the people being comfortable with their role in society, which is that they get to participate on some level, and the vote is significant. I mean, let's face it, it's all you got. I mean, you either got, the vote is a balance, in my opinion, to money. It's what people have, the people, we the people, to balance out the enormous power that comes if you're loaded, right, with dough, with money, and you can fund front organizations like the Democratic Party or the Republican Party and hire a bunch of shine artists to posture idiots who are reading speeches from teleprompters, and this is what we call politics, right? Well, I don't buy that. I don't buy that politics is about balloons and song numbers and contrived speeches and pollsters and fundraisers. I think it's about something much more significant. It's about our role in society as participants and as voters in a democratic republic. Okay, the reality about the Art Danner recall is that it is a test of that principle, whether or not the power does truly lie with the people. If the power lies with the people, if the people are given adequate information, I believe they will act responsibly. I don't know if there is not a way, let me be clear about this, as far as I'm concerned, there is not a way to look at the Danner record, the Danner track record in power,